The Prime Minister wants National Cabinet to meet twice a week now from Monday to deal with the troubled vaccine rollout. The Morrison government says the states and the territories are all facing issues with the mass vaccination effort and they can be best managed together.
We've got to make sure now that we get the rollout as seamless as we possibly can, and that will require states and territories and the Commonwealth working as closely together as they possibly can.
That's Trade Minister Dan Tehan speaking to us before heading off to Europe to lobby for more vaccine doses from Pfizer and AstraZeneca. Well, six unions met yesterday to discuss concerns about the slow pace of the rollout within the aged care sector and the sector people with disability and their carers. Sally McManus is Secretary of the ACTU, which called that union meeting yesterday. Sally McManus, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran. Great to be here.
One thing that emerged from that union's meeting yesterday was a call for the federal government to give the states a bigger role in getting the vaccine distributed. The Prime Minister is doing that now. Do you welcome that?
Yes, this is a good move. What essentially has happened for this really important part of the rollout, and that's for aged care residents, disability service residents and all of their workers, is that the federal government contracted that out to private providers. So there's a whole lot of private providers that have got the money to do that. But from the workers' perspective, we've got no idea whatsoever what the plan is, what the rollout dates are. There's no transparency. There's no information. Both employers and workers are in the same boat with this. And that's really disgraceful when it's 6 weeks away from winter. We met with the government way back in January to talk about how best to do this rollout. We're ready to work with them, yet they decided to effectively privatise this part of it. Now they're saying they want to work with the states. Well, we really welcome that because the states have got hospitals, they've got the facilities, they've got the workforce. This is really actually what should have happened in our view in the first place.
When you met with the government back in January, what were you proposing?
Well, hubs, for example, is a really obvious thing to do, especially when a whole lot of states already have that infrastructure. That would work for
the workforce. Is that like hospitals?
Hospitals, or you could set up specialist hubs as well. And that's because originally some people were thinking, well, we'll do the workers and the residents at the same time. Mm. But I don't think they really had much idea that actually the workers are the ones supporting the residents. It would be mayhem if you tried to do that. So you could get the workers vaccinated much quicker than the residents. And this is obviously a smart thing to do because it's the mobile workforce that has brought the coronavirus into these high-risk areas. So these ideas, who knows where they went, because we just have no idea because there is no published plan around what to do with the rollout in these critical areas.
What we do know is that things are going awry. We're way behind schedule. Now, the Minister Dan Tehan and other ministers say that's largely because of the supply problems, but there clearly are distribution problems. I mean, even on the text line, we've got people writing in saying, I had to wait 2 weeks for my GP appointment to get my vaccine and I got a call yesterday. Now I've got to wait another 2 weeks. Someone else saying they have to wait 6 weeks. Now, that's a supply problem, but also it would seem either a distribution problem or a workforce problem. Are you hearing this from your members?
Listen, we are hearing that. And I know the government's been saying there's supply problems. And if you accept it, even if you accepted that that's one part of it, we think there's a much deeper problem, and that is there is no plan that everyone can see. During the height of the pandemic, we had daily press conferences telling us how many infections there were, what the rolling averages are. Mm-hmm. Why don't we have a similar thing for the vaccine rollout, just like a whole lot of other countries are doing? And if we were doing that, if we did know what the plan is, and say you're at a disability home in Western Sydney, you were due to get the vaccine, you knew you had the notice, and then there was a supply problem, it would all make sense. You've been put back for 2 weeks, you understand why, but at the moment, we're completely in the dark.
So you've written to the Prime Minister with your concerns. I understand you've also written to the Health Minister and Linda Reynolds, who's now responsible for the NDIS, calling for more transparency, which brings accountability, obviously, more daily information, as you just said, about who's being vaccinated. Is that going to be a lot of sort of more paperwork, which will distract even further from attention on getting things rolled out? Or do you think that could actually boost confidence if we see the vaccination numbers going up?
Absolutely, it will boost confidence. It will also, if patience is needed because there's things beyond our control, and at the moment we don't think that's right, but let's say that is part of it, or in the future it is, people will be more confident because we can all see it. Now, we've already actually done the work way back in January around what needs to happen with the rollout. The fact that we're now in April and we don't know what the plan is the issue. Yesterday, after the letter, the Minister's office was on the phone to us wanting to meet. We will do everything we can to
Which
get
minister?
This vaccine rolled out. This was actually Minister Hunt. So that's a good thing. We've got to remember 678 of our elders died last year in aged care. We never want to go through that again. One aged care, one disability worker died as well. We've got an opportunity as a country to protect all these vulnerable people, and we should do it before winter comes.
There seems to be some hurdles that many of us perhaps hadn't anticipated or didn't understand. We heard earlier on AM that nurse practitioners, most of them aren't able, aren't authorised to be involved in actually administering vaccines, which would seem odd, giving nurses do probably most of the injecting in this country, I would have thought. And that seems to be an issue around Medicare providers and getting Medicare payment. I mean, those kinds of problems, should they be getting in the way of this?
Well, these problems should have been fixed earlier. We had to wait longer than others to get our vaccine approved, and that's fair enough. And the government said that's because we've got a high standard.
Yeah.
We had this time. We had this time to sort this stuff out. There's enough people with expertise in this country to administer vaccines. Issues, there are issues in terms of storage, obviously, and logistics getting vaccines out, but we don't have the excuse of being in the middle of a terrible pandemic with people dying every day in an overwhelmed hospital system like the rest of the world. So I don't think that we can, you know, point to any of those problems. We have one job, to keep people safe and for our economy to recover, and that's vaccine rollout, and all efforts should go into making that work.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. Our guest is Sally McManus, Secretary of the ACTU. On another issue, delays to the vaccination program are causing concerns for business, who argue it's pushing back the timeline to bring workers into the country to fill skills gaps. There are skill shortages that are slowing things down, not to mention, other problems for certain specific industries. Do you share that concern?
Well, I think the fact that the borders are now closed and employers can't just bring in temporary work visa workers like they could beforehand, and remember there was well over a million workers here in that circumstance, has shown that we have neglected our skills base. So some employers are saying part of the problem is we can't get skilled workers. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about like really high specialist skilled people. They're talking about even people working in hospitality. Well, that's because we've got lazy as a country and just thought, well, we won't invest in it. We won't invest in TAFE. We won't invest in training of unemployed people, our local people. We'll just bring in people on visas to fill those skills gaps. I think that this gives us an opportunity to have a stronger, better system where we're ensuring that we are training people up. So I'd say that first of all, and that we should not return to a system where essentially there's uncapped visa system where employers can bring people in with no proper testing about whether locals can do it. This is because we've had to pause it. When we do bring it back, and we will need to, because there absolutely will be a need for skilled workers to come back to the country, absolutely, make sure that we do it in a way that isn't neglecting our own locals.
Would wages play a part in this? I've asked that question of Jenny Lambert yesterday from the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. She said the problem is not that businesses could just offer Australian workers more for these jobs and then they'd fill them. Let's have a listen.
It's certainly not a wages issue at the moment in a lot of the regional places. I mean, when you've got the mining industry who usually offered sort of almost double what the average wage earner would earn elsewhere, I mean, not being able to get chefs into mining sites because literally people are reluctant to move at the moment. They're reluctant to take jobs in alternative locations. They're wanting to stay closer to home.
Is that fair enough?
Well, I think she's actually talking about reluctance to travel, which isn't so much wages, because I do not accept that people won't go and work in some of those mining areas, fly in, fly out, for the money they pay. They pay a lot of money, mm-hmm. and a lot of people would kill for those jobs. If they're not getting them, it'll be simply because people are really worried about travel restrictions and uncertainty because of the vaccine. The whole issue of wages, we are now seeing to be a huge issue in the agricultural area, because we all knew it was a terrible secret in Australia that we were absolutely ripping off people on visas and paying them less than what that they were legally entitled to. And now some farmers, not all, some are saying we can't get people. Well, because people actually want to be paid what they're legally entitled to, and that in some areas it's all based on piecework, and people are saying, why would I move to a remote area or a regional area and then not even be paid properly? And so fixing these issues is important if they want to attract workers.
Can I just ask you finally your view of the evidence from former Australia Post CEO Christine Holgate yesterday, but in the Senate inquiry, she said she was humiliated and bullied by the Prime Minister to the point where she was contemplating suicide after it was revealed she gave four executives of Australia Post Cartier watches because of, as a performance bonus. Do you think gender played a part in that, and in general, I mean, what's your view of executives being given a bonus like this?
Well, I think it's very striking that the Prime Minister was prepared to call for the effective sacking of Christine Holgate for this issue, when he's not been prepared to take that type of action around you know, some of the men who have behaved extremely badly, much worse than Cartier watches. So I think that there's a double standard there, and I put that down entirely to gender.
Sally McManus, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Sally McManus is the Secretary of the ACTU.